Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven, stay driven.
Come, little children, I'll take thee away into a land of enchantment. Come, little children, the time's come to play.
Ah, if only that were the case, guys. There will be no lands of enchantment today. Absolutely not. Today, I'm going to take you down the path that leads away from a land of enchantment and one that ends in nightmares. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. I'm your host, Dallas Duclo, and today we're going to be talking about the infamous Christopher Wilder, a.k.a. the Beauty Queen Killer. Now, for those of you not familiar with this monster of a man, he wore the smile of a man and preyed on young women in America and Australia throughout his life. And he saw women in the flower of their youth and couldn't help but pluck them out from the mortal plane. Today, we're going to be talking about his life, his crimes, and how he faced judgment. Before we begin, I'd like to remind you all that we do have a call-in number. The call-in number is 718-508-9883. You guys can call in and ask questions anytime if you want to be part of the conversation. If you have suggestions, comments, or you just otherwise would like to talk to me, feel free to call in at any time. Ceremony, let's get right into it. Christopher Bernard Wilder was born March 13th, 1945. And became known as the Beauty Queen Killer. He was a serial killer from Australia who abducted and raped at least 12 women, killing at least 8 of them during a 6-week cross-country crime spree in the United States in early 1984. His series of murders began in Florida on February 26th in 1984 and continued across the country through Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado, Nevada, and California. He attempted abductions in Washington State as well as New York. Before the end would be seen in New Hampshire on April 13th, 1984. But before we get to the end of the story, we must first cover the beginning. Wilder, as I mentioned, was born on the 13th of March in the year 1945 in Sydney, Australia, the son of an American naval officer and an Australian national. He nearly died at birth, but would recover and almost drowned in a swimming pool at the age of 2. So early on in his life, he was touched by death. And this touch may have been what corrupted him. But we shall see. We shall see soon enough. Now, in 1962 or in 1963, depending on varying accounts, he pled guilty to a gang rape that occurred at a beach in Sydney and was sentenced to probation, during which time he also received electroshock therapy. There was evidence that this treatment exacerbated, perhaps, his violent sexual tendencies, that perhaps this punishment for his pervasive attempts at perversion were encouraged by pain. Nonetheless, he would be released from jail and from his therapy would marry. But after being only married for 1 week, his wife would leave him. Following this, Wilder immigrated to the United States in 1969, and he lived in Boynton Beach, Florida, in an upscale home. He became successful in real estate while developing an interest in photography. From about 1971 to 1975, he faced various charges related to sexual misconduct, and he would eventually rape a young woman he had lured into his truck on the pretense of photographing her for a modeling contract. And this was to become part of his modus operandi during his later rape and murder spree. Despite several convictions, Wilder was never jailed for any of these early crimes that he committed. Important to note that in this case, Wilder was able to escape justice in the earliest instances of his criminal behavior. While visiting his parents in Australia in 1982, Wilder was charged with sexual offenses against two 15-year-old girls whom he'd forced to pose nude for him. His parents posted his bail, and he was allowed to return to Florida to await trial, but court delays prevented his case from ever being heard, as the eventual initial hearing date of April 1984 would come after his death. But we can see that the justice system early on is what allowed Christopher Wilder to thrive as a murderer eventually. Because of their failures to see him for what he was at the early stages. Society often overlooks monsters in plain sight. So it's small wonder that monsters who commit such egregious crimes can escape justice for so long. Nonetheless, Christopher Wilder did just that. In early 1984, he began a bloody six-week cross-country crime spree in the United States. He would leave in his wake a total of 8 murder victims, all female. Nonetheless, before his bloody crime spree could take place, Christopher had to be formed into the monster that he was. Now, before we proceed into his crime spree, I want to dig deeper into Christopher's younger years. And we've touched on some of the big things that formed him into the beast that he became. But I want to dig deeper into this, into those earlier formative years. We mentioned at the beginning of the show, we come to the realization that Christopher nearly died at birth. In fact, so close was he to death that it said that a priest performed last rites immediately after his birth. He recovered, but would be a sickly child. And perhaps this contributed to his near drowning at the age of 2. Following this experience, he suffered a fainting spell placed after a fit of convulsions. Now, in his early years, in his early adolescent years, Christopher found himself in trouble often, peeking through windows, trying to sneak a peek at young women and the neighboring girls. At the age of 17, he and a number of his friends were arrested for that gang rape on a beach. But yet this only netted him a year of probation with counseling, electroshock therapy, the latter of which many believe fueled his fantasies of himself having sex with women and electrocuting them during the process. Was when Wilder married that after discovering his dark sexual predilections, she left him. Now, something we didn't cover early on is that Christopher Bernard attempted to coerce a young nurse into having sex with him, using pictures of naked women in a briefcase, but she went to the police instead. He managed to avoid charges, and then, despite later attempting to coerce another young woman, which led to his emigration to the United States, he would settle in Florida. Now, due to a boom in the electrical and construction businesses, Wilder managed to make his life quite successful. He bought a home, began racing cars, and developed a hobby of photography, as I mentioned earlier. His success was further enriched when he went into real estate. So, by all accounts, Christopher was an industrious young man, an intelligent young man who managed to blend in very well with society. He managed to quickly ingratiate himself with his community, become an integral part. He appeared all for all the world to be a productive, healthy individual, despite his dark predilections of the flesh. Now, I mentioned before in 1971, he was turned over to police when he tried to get women to pose for nude photographs. But he was only fined for this offense. Soon he was arrested again when he tried to force a high school student into having oral sex with him at a home that was under renovation. Going to court, Wilder revealed a fantasy of himself, pleasuring himself to the image of a girl being raped as a response to the judge's question of whether he was sane enough to stand trial or not. During the resulting trial, a doctor and a psychiatrist evaluated him and recommended supervised treatment. Other than that, Wilder was acquitted of the crimes. 3 years later, Wilder, posing as a photographer named David Pierce, managed to lure a schoolgirl out of a Florida shopping mall. He drugged her and forced her to have sex with him in his truck. Releasing her, the girl turned Wilder into the police, but he managed to plea bargain the charges down to probation with therapy, claiming to have blackouts during weekends. He saw a sex therapist after this, who believed that over time Wilder made progress during their sessions. However, Wilder, upon returning to Australia to visit his parents, would abduct two young teenage girls from a beach, tie them up, and force them to pose for him. This is where we return to before his permanent immigration to the United States. So now we've come back to full circle. Young girls into subservient positions and masturbated while standing over them, he released them. And then they went to the police, which is what you would do in that situation. After being arrested, Wilder was bailed out by his parents and was allowed to return to Florida until his trial, which was set to begin, shockingly, in 5 months' time. You would think that with such evidence at their disposal, they would want to begin his trial a little bit sooner than 5 months. However, the trial would be repeatedly postponed, and by the time the hearings were scheduled to occur, he managed to escape their radar. Now, before we continue any further, I do want to take a short commercial break. So we've covered a lot of information, and I do want to get into the actual killing spree that he is quite well known for here in the U.S. But I wanted to backtrack for a moment and give you guys a little bit more insight into the kind of man that this the kind of monster this man truly was. Before we dive into the explicit crimes that he committed during his infamous crime spree, we're going to take a short commercial break, at which point I will remind you all that we do have a proud new sponsor here at Totally Driven Entertainment. He's wacky, he's funny, and he's crazy. Old guys, want to check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for much more uplifting material than what I'm covering. When we come back, we're going to get into the specifics of Christopher Wilder's crime spree here in the United States, and we're going to talk specifically about how he earned the moniker, the Beauty Queen Killer. See you guys very soon.
I'm black man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the black mobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromhomes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well then, visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts, History, and Blood. Okay, of course, we're talking about Christopher Wilder, Beauty Queen Killer. And before the break, I promised you guys we'd get straight to talk about his formative years and how he became what he is known as. Let's get right into it. The brutal crime spree that started in 1984 in the early months. Now, the first murder attributed to Christopher Wilder was that of one Rosario Gonzalez, who was last seen on February 26th in 1984 at the Miami Grand Prix, where she was employed as a model. Wilder also happened to be at the race, where he raced in the IMSA GTU class in a Porsche 911. Too bad nobody dialed 911, right? I know, bad jokes aside. On March 5th, Wilder's former girlfriend, Miss Florida finalist Elizabeth Kenyon, also went missing. Neither woman has ever been found. Now, police linked Wilder to both women after consulting a private investigator who had been hired by Kenyon's parents to discover information related to her disappearance. When 15-year-old Colleen Osborne went missing after leaving her Daytona Beach home on March 15th, Wilder was staying at a motel in Daytona Beach. Though he checked out on the day Ors appeared, no evidence has been found to connect them. Her body was discovered a few weeks later, partially buried near a lake in Orange County, Florida, although it was initially ruled not to be her and was not formally identified until 2011. On March 18th, he would lure 21-year-old Teresa Waite Ferguson away from the Merritt Square Mall in Merritt Island, Florida, and murder her, dumping her body at the Canaveral Groves, where it would be discovered on March 23rd. His next attempted victim was 19-year-old Linda Grover from Florida State University, whom he abducted from the Governor's Square Mall in Tallahassee, Florida, and transported to Bainbridge, Georgia on March 20th. She had declined his offer to photograph her for a modeling agency, after which he assaulted her in the mall parking lot, bound her hands, wrapped her in a blanket, and put her in the trunk of his car. That night, in room 30 of the Glen Oaks Motel, he viciously raped her and then used a blow dryer and superglue to blind her. He tortured her further by applying copper wires to her feet and passing an electric current through them. When she attempted to get away, he beat her. but she escaped and locked herself in the bathroom where she began pounding on the walls. Wilder was startled by this and fled in his car, taking all of her belongings with him. I wish I could tell you that this was the end of the story, but it's Terry Walden, a 23-year-old wife, mother, and nursing student at Lamar University in Beaumont, Texas, and approached her about posing as a model. She turned him down, but she too would disappear 2 days later on the 23rd of March. Wilder stabbed her to death and dumped her body in a canal where she would be found on the 26th of March. After killing Walden, Wilder fled in her rust-colored 1981 Mercury Cougar. Excuse me. On the 25th of March, Wilder abducted 21-year-old Susan Logan at the Penn Square Mall in Oklahoma City. Wilder took her 180 miles north to Newton, Kansas, and checked into room 30 of the I-35 Inn. After breakfast the next morning, he drove to Milford Reservoir, 90 miles northeast of Newton, near Junction City, Kansas, where he brutally stabbed the young woman to death and dumped her body under a cedar tree. Wilder then took 18-year-old Cheryl Bonaventura captive in Grand Junction, Colorado. On March 29th, they would be seen together at a diner in Silverton, where they told the staff they were headed for Las Vegas with a stop in Durango on the way. The next day, they were seen at the Four Corners Monument, after which Wilder checked into the Page Boy Motel in Page, Arizona. Wilder would then shoot and stab Bonaventura to death around March 31st near the Kanab River in Utah, but her body would not be found until the 3rd of May. Wilder also killed 17-year-old Michelle Korfman, an aspiring young model who disappeared from a 17 magazine cover model competition at the Meadows Mall in Las Vegas on April 1st. A photograph was taken of Wilder stalking her at the competition. Her body remained undiscovered near a Southern California roadside rest stop until May 11th and was not identified until mid-June via dental x-rays. So badly decomposed was her body after being left out in the elements that only by checking her dental records were they able to identify her remains. Near Torrance, California, Wilder photographed 16-year-old Tina Marie Risico. Apologize, guys. Before driving her to El Centro, where he assaulted her. Now, Wilder apparently believed that Risico would be of use in helping him lure other victims, so he kept her alive and took her with him as he traveled back east through Prescott, Arizona, Joplin, Missouri, and Chicago, Illinois. At this point, Wilder had been on the FBI's top 10 most wanted fugitives list since the second week of April. He and Risico went to Maryville, Indiana, where she helped him abduct 16-year-old Donette Wilt at the South Lake Mall. Wilder would rape Wilt several times as Risico drove to New York near Penn Yan. Wilder took Wilt into the woods and attempted to suffocate her before stabbing her twice and leaving her for dead. Wilt would survive and recuperate at Soldiers and Sailors Hospital in Penn Yan. She told Penn Yan police that Wilder was headed for Canada. At the Eastview Mall in Victor, New York, Wilder forced 33-year-old Elizabeth Dodge into his car and had Risico follow him, Pontiac Firebird. After a short drive, Wilder lost his patience, shot Dodge, and dumped her body behind a high mound of gravel. He and Risico then drove the Firebird to Logan Airport in Boston, where he bought her a ticket to Los Angeles. Now, later that day, on April 13th, Wilder was stopped at Vicks Getty service station at the corner of Main and Bridge Streets in Colebrook, New Hampshire, where he would be noticed by two New Hampshire state troopers, Leo Jellison and Wayne Fortier. When the troopers approached Wilder, he retreated into his car to arm himself with a Colt Python 357 Magnum. Trooper Jellison grabbed Wilder from behind attempting to subdue him. And in this scuffle, two shots were fired. The first bullet passed through Wilder's body and exited through his back and into Jellison. The second also went into Wilder's chest. Both bullets pierced Wilder's heart and killed him. Trooper Jellison would also be seriously wounded, but he would eventually recover, and return to full duty. Wilder earned the nickname Beauty Queen Killer as a result of his crimes. Possessions. A copy of the novel The Collector by John Falls, in which a man keeps a woman in his cellar against her will until she dies, was found amongst his possessions. Now, before we get to the aftermath and the other crimes that he was associated with, we're going to take one more commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to tie all this up with a pretty bow. We're going to talk about the aftermath of Wilder's death. We're going to talk about the other crimes that he was suspected of committing. And we're going to talk about the lasting legacy of Wilder's crimes. So we're going to do that when we come back. We'll take a short commercial break. We're going to address those things.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Blackmobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our Wacky Stories page on Facebook.
Welcome back, everybody. Sorry about the coughing and the packing today, guys. Do apologize. Still battling a cold, I believe, or at least I sincerely hope that's what it is. But we are back, and now we reach the shocking, I know, shocking conclusion that Christopher Wilder would eventually meet justice. Thankfully, he meets justice, but unfortunately, he didn't face a trial. As I mentioned before the commercial break, Christopher Wilder, the beauty queen killer, was shot in his attempts to resist arrest in Colebrook, New Hampshire. Now, following his death, Wilder would be cremated in Florida. In the wake of his death, he left behind a personal estate worth more than $7 million. In June 1986, a court-appointed arbitrator ruled that the after-tax balance was to be divided between the families of his victims. So I guess in some way, some form of justice was served. But certainly, one might say that it's a cheap way of compensating somebody for the loss of their relative to divide up the murderer's estate as compensation to the families for all they suffered. I'm sure that it certainly, for them, they would have traded it all for having their relatives back. Now, a New Hampshire pathologist, Robert Christie, took a phone call from a man claiming to be from Harvard who said that Harvard wanted Wilder's brain for study. He agreed in the interest of science, but wanted a formal written request, but it never materialized. And when he phoned Harvard, no one there ever admitted to having made such a call. So a little bit of creepiness there. The made-for-TV movie Easy Prey, which came out in 1986, was actually based on Wilder's story. He is featured on the popular Criminal Minds, which I'll be in a roundabout way. But along with the eight known victims that he killed between February and April of 1984, Wilder has been suspected in the murders and disappearances of many other women, including some whose remains were found around Florida in areas that he was known to frequent. Wilder is a suspect in Australia's unsolved Wanda Beach murders, the murders of Marianne Schmidt and Christine Sherrick at Wanda Beach near Sydney on January 11th in 1965, where he happened to be. In 1981, Mary Opitz, 17, disappeared in Fort Myers, Florida on January 16th. And was last seen walking towards the parking lot. Another girl who physically resembled Opitz, Mary Hare, disappeared on February 11th of the same year from the same parking lot. Hare's body, which had been decomposed, was found in June of 1981, and she had been stabbed in the back and was clearly a victim of a homicide. Authorities began to suspect foul play was involved in Opitz's case following this, and Opitz's case remains unsolved. During the year of 1982, the skeletal remains of two unidentified women were unearthed near property owned by Wilder in Loxahatchee, Florida. One victim had been dead for 1 to 3 years, and apparently her fingers had been cut off. Police theorized that whoever killed her could be linked to the crime if the body was ever identified. She was identified eventually as Tina Marie Beeb in 2013, and the other woman had been dead for a period of only months. Sherry Lynn Ball, a 20-year-old aspiring model, went missing in October of 1983 from Boca Raton, Florida. Her badly decomposed body was found by a hunter in Shelby, New York, sometime later, but was not identified until 2014. Her cause of death, unfortunately, could not be determined, but foul play was suspected. Wilder is currently being looked at as being one of the possible suspects for being at least involved in it, since it matches his modus operandi, but no evidence links him to the crime. Another young woman has also been attributed to him, Tammy Lynn LaPierre, age 18, was last seen 11:30 a.m. on July 6th of 1983 in Cocoa Beach, Florida, while in a heated argument with a male companion. LaPere's family filed a $1 million lawsuit against Wilder before his death, but dropped the suit afterwards. LaPere's mother, modeling agent Linda Curtis, later stated that she never believed Wilder was involved in her disappearance, and police were never able to link him to her, and it may be a coincidence that she disappeared at the same time he was targeting area models. Though he did have a long history of sex crimes, he did not begin his killing spree until almost a year after this young lady vanished. Another unidentified woman was discovered. The Broward County Jane Doe was found floating in the canal on February 18th in 1984 in Davie, Florida, and she had been strangled to death, was thought to have been dead 2 days prior to being found. So probably unlikely that he killed her. And on March 7th of 1984, Melody Marie Gay was abducted. She was 19, was abducted working the graveyard shift at an all-night store in Collier County, Florida. Her body was pulled from a rural canal 3 days later. Due to the similarities between her murder and Wilder's crimes, it was initially thought that she had her death as a suspect. So, what else can we glean from Wilder? Well, one thing we do know, so Christopher Wilder was a particularly nasty individual. We're not entirely sure to this day, you know, what exactly it was that inspired Christopher Wilder, I guess you could say, to be the vicious criminal that he was. But one thing is certain, Christopher Wilder was a terrible, terrible person, in so much that he was a cruel individual that liked to watch people suffer, and had no problem in inflicting as much pain as possible before he killed people. In that way, Christopher Wilder is perhaps one of the more notorious serial killers in American history, and certainly is one of the more twisted individuals we've talked about on the show, certainly worthy of the moniker, the killer. And as I mentioned before, Wilder was featured in a let's take a look at his popular where he's been featured in popular culture. He was featured in the TV movie Easy Prey, in Criminal Minds as well, but he was also featured in the TV series documentary Disappeared and History's Mysteries: Infamous Murders. He's been the topic of the many podcasts, not only my own, but also another podcast, the Serial Killers Podcast. You can check out their website, serialkillers.briancombs.net, to take a look at some little bit of crime, criminology, and history regarding specifically serial killers, if you're interested. But I'd also recommend that you take a look on the topic. You know, we've covered. I always like to encourage people to read, but you want to check out Bruce Gibney's "The Beauty Queen Killer" for sure. I'd recommend that. I'd also recommend that you take a look at "Murders in the United States: Crimes, Killers, and Victims of the 20th Century," co-written by Lorraine Flowers and Barry R. Flowers. And lastly, I think we want to take a look at Juan Ignacio Blanco's Christopher Wilder. And again, there is a number. This is a guy that it's worth noting. This is a very twisted individual, but history doesn't always tell us pleasant stories, but that doesn't make that story less valuable. What can we learn from individuals like Christopher Wilder? Now, I know a lot of people would say, why give this guy the time? Why give Christopher Wilder the time? And before I sign off for the day, I want to give you guys the reason why we give some of these individuals the time. Why should we give murderers and dictators and monsters from history the time? Well, the number one reason why we should give them the time is to never, ever forget their victims. We must never forget people with great crimes, people who suffer egregious crimes at the hands of tormentors should never be forgotten. That's the one. That's the number one reason why we should definitely talk about dictators and talk about murderers and criminals who kill people, because we need to remember those people. We need to remember that these people took valuable parts of our society away from us. Innocent people were killed, and that in and of itself is merit to talk about these people. They robbed these people of their lives. Now, another major reason why I think it's very important that we talk about serial killers and we talk about dictators and we talk about these cruel individuals from history is to try and understand how they become the things that they are. How do they become these cruel, disconnected, or in the case of Christopher Wilder, he was very connected to his victims. But how do these people get to a point where they can become so cruel and can, or even to the point where they dehumanize people, where people's lives don't have any inherent value for them? How does one get to that point? The only way we would ever find the answers to these kinds of questions is to cover these kinds of people. They are the people who are taking others' lives. The average everyday person does not go around murdering people. If they did, we'd have a very small population. But these individuals are like sharks in human skin. They go around and they eat. They consume. For those of you who don't know, sharks will eat just about anything. Most sharks eat things that aren't even food. There's a lot of weird, funky things that have been found inside of sharks. And in that way, serial killers and murderers are kind of like sharks. They do eventually develop their own methodology for killing people and their own reasons for doing so. But at the end of the day, they'd eat anything if they could. End of the day, what unites them is that they will kill anybody. They could kill anybody at any time. Now, they eventually develop their own taste, but one thing that sort of unites serial killers almost across the board universally is that they all get their start with that first kill, and it doesn't really even have to be all that special. It's the opportunity that presents itself that allows them to kill people. And from that moment on, it changes. And for those of you who've been paying attention to the show for a while, you've seen me cover some of these other twisted individuals from history. Oftentimes, what allows these serial killers to go on these killing sprees and to do these terrible things for so long, for such extended periods of time, and to pile up such body counts, is the fact that oftentimes people don't see the warning signs, right? They don't see the writing on the wall. They choose not to see. We want to give people that fair opportunity. We see them commit a crime in their youth, and we think, oh, he just made a mistake. But oftentimes, a lot of these people slip under the radar. They slip through the cracks. The system fails us, and these people manage to get away. They slip out of our grasp, and eventually they grow bolder. They grow bolder, and they grow more aggressive, and eventually these people start killing people. And that's not always the case, but in many cases, what allows a serial killer to blossom into a full-on serial killer instead of just a one-time murderer is the fact that they go unnoticed by the system that is meant to protect us, and they go unnoticed by the people around them. Our inability to see people for what they are and to see what we want to see, or feel like we need to see something else. Our inability to see past the facade that a lot of these people project we rule out the possibility of a lot of these people being murderers. You know, Christopher Wilde, yeah, he committed, he had crimes, a history of sexual criminal behavior, deviant sexual behavior that he had carried over with him from Australia. But his neighbors didn't know that, right? They didn't know that. The everyday person around him didn't know there was anything wrong with him. Why? Because he projected an aura of success. He blended into his community. Right? He became a successful businessman. He was into racing. He had rich man hobbies. Photography, race car driving. The man had an estate worth well over $7 million by the time he died, which in the 80s would have been a lot of money. A lot of the time, these monsters are able to hide in plain sight. But the answer is there. Their predatory nature is right there on the surface if we choose to see it. Christopher Wilder simply did these things. He went out and got this he put on this facade of a wealthy man pursuing wealthy hobbies. But in reality, all these things did was allow him to get closer to the people he wanted to kill, to the people he wanted to injure, the people he wanted to harm. One has to wonder what would have happened if after that first crime, that first spurt of criminal activity on the hands of Christopher Wilder had been met with a stiffer punishment. If they had taken the time to stop 17-year-old Christopher Wilder gang rape on a beach with some other young men, if he had received a stiffer penalty than simply a one-year probationary period, one has to wonder what would have happened. How many lives could have been saved if people would have taken the time to say, wow, wait a minute. Here's a 17-year-old boy who's been running around peeping in on people, and he participates in a gang rape, and he's all for it. And if that hadn't been enough, the fact that he is in a courtroom later on, just a few years later, talking about it, attempting to prove himself insane by talking about pleasuring himself to the thoughts of a woman being raped in front of him. How does a monster like that slip through the cracks? How is it possible that someone like that can get away? How is it possible that we don't look at that insanity as something a little bit more than just insanity? If someone said something like that to your face, you would have a completely different perspective on how that person is. You wouldn't be able to just look at them as insane. You'd look at them as evil. And I can tell you right now that certain people in this world, they have evil intentions. And if having evil intentions and then pursuing those intentions is not evil, then I don't know what is. But there is no doubt in my mind that Christopher Wilder, the beauty queen killer, was an evil man. He committed evil deeds against innocent people. He cruelly, violently assaulted, tormented, and murdered young women because he felt like it, because he could. Because he wanted to. Because it pleased him to do so. Because watching another person suffer filled him with delight. Now, some people would say that that's sick. And you'd be right. That is sick. That's a terrible thing to do. That is, you have to be demented and disgusting, a deplorable person. Take delight in those sorts of things. To blind somebody and then violently sexually assault them, that is sick behavior. But I have to ask, I have to wonder, and I'll leave you guys with this thought. Even if it's just, is it just sick behavior? Possible that this deplorable and sick, disgusting behavior is more than just sickness. Human wickedness. Wickedness that exists in that primal core dark part within each and every one of us. And I have to wonder, I have to wonder if the reason we fail to acknowledge it is because we're afraid to see that same evil exists within our hearts just waiting to get out. I wonder if that's how serial killers and dictators slip through the cracks for so long, to wonder if we fail to see evil before us when it's before us because we're afraid to look into that dark abyss and see a reflection of ourselves in it. But guys, that's all the time I've got here for you today. That's all I've got. I hope you guys enjoyed the show, and I hope you take a little bit of solace in the fact that this monster, at least, met his end at the hands of the law. He fought the law, and the law won. And guys, before we go, I do want to say we should all take that time to ask ourselves each day. And this is not paranoia, but I think we should all take the time to ask ourselves each day, are we winning in our fight against our own wickedness? And can we truly see that in another person? Enjoy the rest of your day, guys. Catch Straight Football Talk's exclusive interview with Vince Papale at 7 p.m. here at Totally Driven Entertainment. Enjoy the rest of your week, guys. See you all on Sunday.